Hi, and welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Corey Fowler, and with me is Nick Harris.
That's right, a man who needs no introduction.
Yes, yes, and for most of the shows, you don't really get too many introductions, so...
Oh, I don't get to introduce myself. That's okay.
Yeah.
So, where's Nate?
Nate's on vacation right now, so hopefully he's out enjoying the sun or...
Yeah, I hear he's on a cruise ship cruising around...
What a lucky guy.
...the east coast of America or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's not too bad. The weather here is pretty nice. It's not, it's, you know, rainy, glorious self.
Yeah, it's warm. And I actually hopped on a bus today, a shuttle to get here. And the shuttle driver had the heater on full. Crazy.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. But what do we have in the news, Corey?
In the news, we have a couple of things. First off, we have Brian Swan did an article on how to install PHP 5.4 in a Windows Azure cloud service worker role.
Right.
So basically, if you want to go out and do PHP 5.4 development, currently the tools are only set up to do PHP 5.3.
Right.
So he's introduced this blog post of how you can go and set up 5.4 if you're going out and doing that today.
Did it mention why he used a worker role rather than a web role?
He basically explains that it's easier to do the setup within a worker role.
Okay.
But you would be able to do it within a web role as well. I did a blog post not too long ago when PHP 5.2 was supported as the official supported language, and I did a 5.3 install.
So is he doing it via code, or is he using a startup task there?
He's using a startup task.
Okay.
So what he's done is he's actually... remote desktoped into the instance, went and set everything up to make sure it worked, copied down the steps, and then put that into a CMD file that you can execute in the startup task.
Okay, so that should be then transferable to a web role if someone wanted to use it.
Yeah, yeah. And actually the last step that he outlines here is opening up port 80 as an input endpoint. So he's essentially making it a web role by opening this port up, but he says that's an optional step because you could technically run PHP from the command line. So
cool.
Yeah.
What else do we have?
The next item is one of our MVPs, David Paulman. He's created this really interesting JavaScript project called Azure Query, and basically it's a JavaScript bridge towards table storage. So it's kind of a really simple chainable abstraction of table storage. And basically, he's gone out and created this as an open source project. It's available on CodePlex, and we'll get to that in a second.
So it does, by the looks of things, that's blobs there. You mentioned tables, so is it across all of Windows Azure Storage? So tables, blobs, queues?
Yeah, he outlines a number of different things. Down at the bottom here, he gets into... actually, it looks like he does mostly do blobs, but I... do believe that tables are supported as well.
Okay.
We're looking to try and get David on Webcams TV,
yep.
The other show on Channel 9, focusing on web technologies.
Shameless plug.
Yeah.
It's all right.
But the cool thing about this is it's a great abstraction in JavaScript, which is typically something you wouldn't do. But you do still need some server-side components, as you can see here. He's actually doing he's doing a call out to a handler sitting within his own MVC project.
Right.
So the reason you want to do this is it hides that account name and storage key, so people couldn't just go and start browsing through your storage. So it is JavaScript, but you do still need some server-side components to it just to enable a little bit more secure of an environment.
Well, he doesn't want the keys on the client side.
Yeah, you definitely don't want the keys on the client side.
So. I'm not sure if you have played with it much, but have you read through to see if he offers an example of how he locks down that web API that he's providing, such that, you know, just anyone randomly couldn't call into it to get it? Because storing the keys there is great, but if you don't then secure that tier to perhaps, you know, the subset of everyone out there on the world that wants to use it.
At the bottom of his post here, he actually does make a call out to the fact that it is brand new and still in development, so security... for securing such things is still up to the developer that uses it. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah, and then that's available on CodePlex, so you can go to azurequery.codeplex.com.
Nice.
And he's got everything here, including some JSON calls on how to actually put this together.
All right.
You may remember the Flatterist.
Yes.
way back when Steve Mark was hosting the show, him and Wade created this application called the Flatterist. And I have to thank Steve for calling me a rock star this morning. It really boosted my spirits.
Chris, is your audio on? All right, so there we go. Now hit refresh.
Your bone structure is marvelous.
Wow, I have very good bone structure.
Yes, you do.
That's amazing. and I can hear that.
I follow you on Twitter.
That's is very true. Yes. Yeah. I can't believe that, Steve.
You are awesome.
Thank you.
You are awesome, yeah.
All right.
I can't believe that he did all the voiceovers.
All right, so this is something he built and runs on Azure, but where are you going with this?
So the reason I introduced this is Wade actually gone out in one step further and has actually extended the project with the Twilio API.
Right.
So you can now get text messages to your phone with a flattering comment.
Right.
So really interesting. If you if you're interested in checking it out, the code's out on GitHub,
yep.
And it's a great way to get an inspiring message first thing in the morning.
Yep, and Twilio is a partner on WindowsAzure.com, right?
Yes.
So there's some details there in the develop tabs of how you can integrate with that service to do something like Wade's done here.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Might have to subscribe to that.
Yeah, I think it'd be really interesting.
Nice.
Cool, so the next item here, I guess you're going to cover because you're
right.
The Win8 guru.
Awesome. So the Windows 8 RTM is available. As it says there, it's available to MSDN subscribers and TechNet professional subscribers. If you're not a member of one of those, click on the download page on the link that Corey's got up there. But now that we've got RTM here, it's a good time to grab all the latest bits and start, you know, devving out your Win8 apps that perhaps utilize an Azure backend. So to do that, you need VS 2012. So if you could show me the MSDN subscription here. So within there, you can see there's VS 2012. RTM available, and also Win8 RTM there. So awesome news for us.
Yeah.
But if you're an Azure developer, there's one more thing that you will need for this,
right.
And that's a refresh to the Windows Azure SDK. So if you look here at our WebPI Corey's got up on the screen here, you can see that there's a June 2012 SP1 download available for the Windows Azure SDK. So you need to download that and install it to be able to utilize it within the RTM build of VS 2012.
Great. And does that download the SDK and all the tools, or are the tools still a separate download?
No, that should be SDK and tools. It should all come down. It's all chained.
Great.
Yep.
Awesome.
All right. So I think that leads us into our main segment today, which is we're going to have our co-worker, John Galloway. Galloway. Sorry.
Galloway.
A bit of a pronunciation issue there, but... John's one of our evangelists, and he works remotely, and he's actually done a really great recording that goes through and shows out the new VS 2012 RTM and ASP.NET 4.5 and ASP.NET MVC 4. So he's got a good demo around that and goes through and I guess details what's new in some of those things, but also some of the gotchas you've got when you go and deploy up to Azure. So let's cut across to John.
Great. Off to you, John.
Ta-da.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So I'm going to be running through Visual Studio 2012 web developer features. We're going to take a look at ASP.NET 4.5 web forms, MVC4, and then we're going to pop over to deploying an application using the web deployment features and Windows Azure websites. So I'm going to create a new project, and we're going to create a web forms application. Now you'll notice as it's creating the application, if you look in the lower left corner and take a look at the status, you'll see pretty soon it's going to start pulling in a bunch of NuGet packages. What's cool about this is things even like JavaScript, like jQuery Modernizer, including .NET OpenAuth, Entity Framework, all these things are pulled in via NuGet. So that means they can be updated in the project feed. That allows you to update things and all the dependencies are tracked for you. So if you want to update jQuery UI, it's going to make sure that you've got the jQuery library that fits with that. So before we dig into the code here, I'm just going to hit F5 and run this. And what you'll notice is that WebForms has a new, newly designed page layer, you know, site theme. So what's cool about this, number one, it looks very much like an MVC4 page template, so that's nice. Also, this is taking advantage of mobile, well, it's adaptive rendering, so that it looks good on mobile devices. So pay close attention to the header here, and you'll notice you've got the logo on the left side, and you've got navigation on the right side. But when I minimize this down, you'll see that the page automatically restyled itself so that it's going to look good on a mobile device. And this is done automatically in HTML and CSS using modern web standards. So let's take a look. We'll go over into our CSS, and you'll see that we've got some mobile themes defined, or mobile styles defined, and this is done using a media query. So this is really cool. This is built into the project templates. You don't have to do anything to take advantage of it. And automatically here, any screen width below 850 pixels is going to have all these following CSS rules applied. So we're no longer floating things left and right in the header. We're making some adjustments so that things look good on a mobile device. There are tons of web developer friendly updates for the CSS, HTML, and JavaScript editor. I'll just show you a few. So if we hit Control J on any color, it's going to bring up this color picker. And this is a smart color picker because it's based on the colors that are already appearing in this CSS. So if I've got some commonly used colors that I'm using, I don't have to kind of search around and dig for what was that light blue color. It's right here. But what's even nicer is we've got a bunch of advanced options if we want them. So I can, zoom around and use the color picker. I've also got this eyedropper thing, and this works inside, so I can, pick things inside Visual Studio, which is not that useful, but I could also pop into a website. Let's go over, into, say, the footer, into my taskbar, and so I can pick a color. What's also neat is you'll notice we've got a hex color here because it's 100% opacity. When I drop this opacity down, it automatically switches to RGBA so that it can apply an alpha to the color. So now we've got some transparency. I'm going to put that back up to 100% transparency, and it switches back to hex. So there are tons of different things in here that are just kind of built in. We've got completing for your fonts. We've got just all kinds of things all the way through it. You'll just notice things just kind of work the way you'd hope they would work. Now I want to show off in WebForms, one of the coolest new features is support for model binding. So it's this whole model binding and strongly typed way of working with data. And what really this is an enhancement to the existing object data source, but it's adapted so that it works a lot more like the model binding and data features in ASP.NET MVC. So let's take a look. First, I've got an issue class, and this is a very simple class, and we've just got some data annotations defined. And then I went in and created a database context for Entity Framework. And then if we look here, I've got a simple database initializer just to populate some values. So I'm going to run this, and then we'll take a look at how I set this up inside the page itself. So this is a very simple issue tracker. We've got a grid view below. We've got a filter on top, so I can say I would like to see everything after, May 1st, 2012. It's going to filter that list down. I can select items out of this list for editing. So, this is kind of, there are enough features here. There's some things going on with linked up data aware controls. So now let's take a look at how that's set up. If we look into default.aspx, you'll notice that the this grid view here has an item type defined. So we're saying that we're working with a specific item type. And this gets really interesting when you look at the select method. So what we're saying is we're not, using a data source to bind this. We're defining a method to go get this data from. So let's take a look. And this is a handy feature here. The Solution Explorer lets you kind of drill into a class without, you know, going in and searching around. So I'm going to look at this get issue, and there's a lot of goodness in here in very few lines of code. So the main thing to notice is we are requesting from Entity Framework the list of issues, and we're returning it. So that was very simple. We're also in here to make that filter work. We're binding to the created sense control. So it's going to look for a control with the name of created sense. It's an optional date time, so it's not required. If it exists, it's going to populate it. And so if this created sense has a value, then we're going to apply that query. So really simple and powerful. And this is all done in a way that makes it, you know, easy to manage, because you're actually calling into methods and not kind of passing data from events and things. Also, this is strongly typed. So if we take a look at throughout the page, instead of evaling, we are able to, because we've got an item type defined again. So in this form view, we have an item type defined of type issue. And so now when I want to bind to something, I can say, you know, bind item dot, and I've got actually IntelliSense here. So I can say here I would like to bind a title. Because title is a string, that's strongly typed as a string. And so now I can go through here and I'm going to get string kinds of IntelliSense. So this is really nice. If you've been frustrated with doing data binding and, you know, you type a string wrong and you don't know it until you view the page and it's just tough to troubleshoot, this really improves that experience. You might also notice, if you've, you know, fought with bind expressions in the past, that here we've got something inside a quote. And up until Visual Studio 2012, if you had, you know, code running inside quotes, you didn't get IntelliSense at all. So this is one of those just kind of nice features that's just all throughout Visual Studio 2012. I want to show one other thing, is that we've got support for things like, you know, if I type video, I think I'm going to have to stop running here. So there I typed video and hit tab, and it automatically did this completion, so I don't have to try and remember exactly what is required. If I type in audio, right, so this is, let's say this is demo, and it updated both of them for me, so this is all the standard kind of snippet stuff. And so you'll see that Visual Studio 2012 is very up-to-date with all the kind of new features for, you know, up-to-date standards. Now, one thing I do want to point out is that WebForms 4.5 requires .NET 4.5, and .NET 4.5 isn't available on Azure yet. It will be sometime after .NET 4.5 general availability. So right now, 8.15 is released to manufacturing, and then there's general availability. Hopefully very soon after that, we can get .NET 4.5 support on Azure. However, if you want to play with this stuff right now on Azure, we've got support for MVC4. So I'm going to close this down and create a new MVC4 application. So MVC4 runs on both .NET 4 and 4.5. Some new things you'll notice in MVC4, we've got an empty template. Before, the empty template wasn't completely empty. It still had some things in there. And people really wanted an empty template to be completely empty, so it is. Basic is now what used to be empty, so it still has some style defined and, you know, your controllers folder and things like that. Internet applications, what we'll be looking at in a second, and it's kind of your standard, you know, it's got that same template look as we saw in web forms. It's got an account controller, so it'll handle login, registration, with some cool goodies in there. We'll look at that in a second. Intranet application is the same thing as an internet application. but the account system is built to use Windows authentication. So there's no need for, you know, ASP.NET to handle any of your account stuff. That's all kind of delegated off to Windows Auth. Mobile application uses jQuery mobile templates. So this is really cool if you want to build an application that's really targeted at mobile devices. It has all kinds of, you know, features and controls that look really great and respond well on mobile devices. And Web API is a new system for building HTTP services. So this is if you want to build services that return, you know, JSON or XML and work really well with HTTP standards. It's a really kind of seamless way to do that. So we're going to create a new internet application. You'll notice again we're pulling in those NuGet packages as this project is created. One of those things that flashed by real quick there is that Newtonsoft JSON.NET. So the JSON serializer that's used in MVC4 is the same, has been upgraded. The previous JSON serializer kind of wasn't that great, and so they realized that this open source JSON.NET library is, you know, community likes it, it's a great serializer, so they've just included that. So here, you know, if we run this, we would see the exact same template experience that we saw in web forms. So again, we've got this experience here where it looks great, you know, wide or narrow screen. Now, one of the other really cool features in an MVC4 and ASP.NET 4.5 web forms application is when I click on this login button, it's going to offer me the traditional, you know, ASP.NET membership way of logging in, so I can register, create an account, all that. But you'll notice here over on the right, we can use other services to log in. So let's set that up. First of all, we're looking, normally in the past, all our configuration stuff for MVC was getting jammed into global, and global ASAX was getting pretty crowded. So they split that off, and they've put it over in App Start. So we have these separate configuration areas. So one of those is auth config. And you'll see for OAuth clients, you need to have a consumer key and secret. So those are basically the way that your application, a specific application, registers with those services. For OpenID services, we can just delete that. And this is these OAuth web security wraps .NET OpenAuth and makes it very easy to set this up. So I'm going to hit F5 and run this again. And this time, when I click on login, it's going to allow me to log in with my Google account. So I'm clicking on login. And it automatically detects the services I have registered, and it's going to show that on the right-hand side. So here I'll click Google. I've previously logged into my Google account. So here I'll just say, yes, I allow. And it's going to pop me back over. And now it says, OK, inside of ASP.NET, I can use the email address I had there, or I can say, no, I would like my username to be, you know, just John, simple John here. And then I'll click Register. And now I've registered for this site without, you know, going in and creating a specific account. All I've done is logged in using Google. So anytime in the future, I can go in and log in using that account. It's support for, you know, Twitter, Facebook, all these other kind of popular services for logging in. So now that we've got that complete, let's look at one more feature. I almost forgot Web API. So Web API is, as I said, a cool way of building services. There's a specific project type for Web API, but you can also, it works very well inside of an MVC application. So here I'm going to say I would like to create a new controller, and I have a new controller type available. And so I'm going to say I would like to create a, you know, a services controller. And so in my list here, I can say I would like an API controller using, and I could use Entity Framework. I'm just going to say I'm going to use empty read-write actions. And you'll see here that we've got all these methods here, these controller actions, are named after HTTP verbs. So we have things like get, put, post. What's nice there is that this is all very convention-driven. So now I'm able to create a service and it's going to, you know, return JSON or XML or whatever other kind of content is requested by the browser via headers. So I'm going to go ahead and deploy this application using Azure Websites. So first of all, I'm going to go into my Azure Websites portal and I'm going to create a new website. So we'll call this something like John says hello to Visual Studio 2012. And we'll create that website. So this is always blazingly fast. I enjoy watching this quickly create. Boom. Okay. So now we're going to go in and we're going to get my publish profile. So I'm going to download this. Yes, I do. I would like to save this on the desktop. So I'm just going to do that. I'm going to, boom, here's my desktop. Okay. So now, that's a very simple, small XML file that just has all my published settings for Azure. So now I would like to publish my website. So I'm going to pop over here and click on Publish. And this new dialog is built into Visual Studio 2012. It's available for you in Visual Studio 2010 as an extension. So I'm going to say I would like to, and I could have clicked here, you know, gone through all that stuff. I'm going to import the one that I just downloaded. So we'll take a look on my desktop. And hello, desktop, where are you? There you are, thank you. So there are my published settings. I'm going to open that up. This is going to pre-populate everything. It's got my password, it's got everything about how to log in. I can hit validate connection. This is going to verify that, yes, everything that I filled in here is correct. Hopefully it is. Boom, it is correct. So now I'm just going to say publish. And we'll notice all the things are going on here. It is packaging it up and publishing it out. If I remember, this only is going to work on a .NET 4 application right now. .NET 4.5 is not supported on Azure Websites or Azure. One of the cool things here is that if I had any migrations, you know, those migrations will run correctly during the build and all that kind of stuff. So publishing it out, watching all the child packages get all those DLLs get pushed out. Okay, and boom, here comes my site. So very quickly, I built a new MVC application, deployed it using Azure Websites, and the cool publishing features that are built in to Visual Studio 2012. One nice thing here is that these published profiles are actually saved into my application, so they can be versioned or whatever else. So that is really nice. And that's about it. There is a ton of other stuff that's new in Visual Studio 2012, in ASP.NET 4.5, and in MVC 4. So I recommend going over to the ASP.NET website, ASP.NET, and we've got tons of new content there. Let me point out one area where you can get a lot of good specific new information. If we go to ASP.NET/vnext, and inside the vnext area, we've got a lot of great content. This is kind of your where to find everything about the new release. One thing that you'll find here is in the videos area, we've got a bunch of new videos from Scott Hanselman where he digs into all the features I just talked about and shows a lot more in deeper detail. So this is a fantastic resource for getting started. So that's it for me, and back to you, Nick.
Awesome. Thanks for that, John.
That was pretty cool.
It was very informative.
Yes, nice. So I think it's about that time of the week or the show.
The week. It is kind of epic for the week. I'm guessing that you're talking about the infamous tip of the week.
That is correct.
Awesome.
Tip of the week. So do you want to do an intro to tip of the week this time?
I don't know.
Yours a few times
I remember
back,
the last
good.
Time I did it, I got banned from the show for a while, so I think we might want to avoid me doing something crazy to introduce the tip
okay.
of the week.
All right.
I guess we'll leave the good stuff to Bob to edit in.
Okay.
But I guess we could do like the classic tip of
do
the week.
Do a high five?
Yeah, let's high five in the tip
okay.
of the week.
You ready? Sit.
Tip of the week!
Thank you.
And we're back.
Bob? What are you doing?
Bob, can you get us back in the screen, please? Okay, great, thanks.
Okay.
All right, great. Now that we're back in the frame, I guess let's see what the tip of the week is. Nick, what do you have for us?
So a couple weeks back, Jay actually mentioned that there is some new APIs available for storage, for Windows Azure storage. So one of the features there is the asynchronous cross-account copy blob. So there's a couple reasons you may want to do that. One is you may want to implement your own backup scenario to take your blobs from, you know, container X over to another storage account somewhere else. Now, we've already got that built in with the geo-redundancy that we've got in Windows Azure. Okay. And that's the little checkbox that's checked when you provision a storage account. But that data isn't readily accessible to you if you want to go and get that. It's more for a failover scenario. So this cross-account copy blob actually allows you to copy them out to an account where you may want to sort of just have them backed up for whatever reason that you may want to do that.
And the cool thing about that is it could also be cross-subscription. So
yes.
Not only can you just back it up to another storage account, but if you had another subscription that you wanted to have less permissions for, so if you're in a large enterprise, you can basically just have the build engineers have access to that data or the IT pros have access to that data. And it just provides a nice, simple way of keeping things secure and backed up in a safe environment.
Yeah. So I guess the tip of the week this week, this has already been mentioned, but I actually wanted to provide a demo and show how this is done, because I've noticed, like, out on Stack Overflow and some other places online, the forums and such, that people are having difficulty figuring out how to get this working.
Yep.
Now, the reasoning is this feature is, it's already released, but it's a feature of the 1.7.1 SDK, which currently isn't, you know, built and publicly consumable. Mm-hmm. What it is, or where it is released, is on GitHub. So you can download it from GitHub and include it in your own projects, start building out against it, and that all works fine. So I really want to show people how they can do that, and then how they can use that to do cross-account blob copy.
Great.
So if you were to click on the GitHub link here, it actually takes you to GitHub. So within here, you've got the Microsoft Azure API, and within there, you've got your storage client and such. So to get this code, it's simple, just hit download. There's the git zip here. So I've actually already done this and extracted it out to my file system. So you can see there's a Microsoft Azure API, and there's a project file here for the storage client. So let's flip to Visual Studio, where I've already put together a console application. But let's have a look at how people can then go and reference that and then build that client library. It's all pretty straightforward stuff, but for those of you that perhaps may need a hint on how to do this, this is how you do it. So we've gone to add a new item, or add a new project. Oh, that's a reference, sorry. Let's go up here and say add existing project. We'll browse into where I've extracted that, select the storage client, hit OK. Right, so now it's in my solution. I can build this guy. Now, don't worry about those errors. They're from my console app, because my console app at the moment isn't referencing that storage client library. So now I can reference the storage client library in my solution, hit OK. Now I can build it. And now we've got a local copy of the storage client library for 1.7.1 and a console app that's going to demonstrate this scenario of copying blobs across storage account.
Great.
So one of the important things to note is this API, what it does for you is it means that blob being copied from, say, storage account A to storage account B doesn't need to come down via your machine that's executing the code. It actually queues up a job in the background for the Windows Azure Storage Service to take that blob and copy it off across directly. So you don't have that egress coming out of the data center. So if both those storage accounts are in the one data center, you have no egress cost for creating this backup. You only have a cost for the actual data storage or transactions against it. If you were to be copying that blob from, say, the storage account on East US to West US, well, then you'd have an egress cost as well for that. Mm-hmm. The main thing to note is that it's happening behind the scenes in Windows Azure, as opposed to, you know, being funneled through your local machine or whatnot.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out. And it's also an asynchronous copy, so you can just have it go off and do its thing, and then it will just complete on its own.
Yeah.
The best part about not bringing it down to your machine is if your machine was to shut off during the copy, you would not have that copy over, which doesn't make for a really good backup scenario whatsoever.
Yep. Yeah, good point. So there's a few key things to point out here. So let's have a look at them. What I've already done is I've gone off and pre-prepared this demo and created a source storage account. This is Cloud Explorer. It's a free downloadable Explorer for Windows Azure Storage that you can pull in. This particular variant of it is just for blobs specifically. But we've got a source storage account and a destination storage account. And what we want to do is we want to use this API to go and copy all the blobs from the source container across to our destination container.
Great.
Now, there's a few things you need to do that. Apart from the API, you need to create a policy on your source storage account, and you need to create a shared access signature on that such that the Windows Azure Storage Service can actually read the blobs from that container and pull them across.
Now, is that only because you have a private folder? Like, if it was a public, container, if it was a public container, would you just be able to make the call and it would be fine, or would you still need to generate that shared access signature?
No, for public containers, it should be able to pull them directly because they're visible to the public, so it should be just the same. In this scenario, what I'm doing is using a private container just to demonstrate how the shared access signatures work.
Great.
So let's have a look here. So we've got our store, and by no means is this like nice production code. It's streamlined to basically demonstrate the concepts to you. So we've got our keys for our source storage account and our destination storage account. So the first line of code here is just to say, well, take or get a handle to the cloud storage account for my source and my destination. So the next thing we need to do is say, well, let's create a policy for our storage account. Now, that policy is going to say how long those shared access signatures that we're generating are valid for. So I've created a little method here that basically says, take in the storage account that you want to create the policy on, the container that policy is valid for, the policy name, and how long you want the policy to be valid for. So what this means is those jobs, those copy jobs that are created in the Windows Azure Storage Service, they last for up to 14 days.
Okay.
So you may queue them up, and it'll go and do them in the background, but the maximum time that'll be retained there as a copy job is 14 days. If it's not done in that period of time, then it's lost. So that's why I've chosen 14 days for the shared access signature to be valid for.
Great, that's a good tip.
Yep. So creating the policy, let's have a look here. So what I do, get a reference to the container that you want to create the policy for. Then we get a container permissions object, and this is referring to your question before. What kind of access do we want in this container? Well, in this case, I'm saying let's make the container private. So I've set that to off. And then what we do is we add a shared access policy. And now this is that policy that defines how long the shared access signature is valid for. The good thing about policies is essentially if you want to revoke that policy at some point in time, you can do that as well.
Yeah, you don't have to wait for those 14 days to expire. You can just go in and
revoke it.
Yep.
Yep. So this policy says, well, we want basically only read permissions because our copy only has to read from the source container. It doesn't need to write anything to the source container. Now, there's a property here, and this is a good tip as well, shared access start time. Now, this property allows you to specify when that policy for those shared access signatures is valid. So if you wanted to create one that's valid, say, starting in a week from now, you can do that. But if you want it to start right now, then it's best not to say like datetime.now, because with time skews and such, you may get back a response saying, you know, the shared access signature isn't valid.
Yeah.
So if you want it available immediately, just don't specify that at all, and then just specify the expiry time, which is that 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing to do is to just call set permissions on that blob container, and that'll do that for you. So I've got some breakpoints in here, and what we'll do is I think we'll execute this guy. and then we'll see the policy created. So let's step through, or step over is fine. So that policy should now be created. So if I come into my storage account, we can see on our source container, properties, policies, hit policies, and you can see our copy policy there is now created for 14 days, or to expire 14 days in the future. So the next thing that we need to do is the actual copy job. So what I'm doing here now is I've got these source container and destination container references. So that's just in my source storage account, destination storage account, the folders that I want to copy from and to. So we take that and we pass it into this method. Now, let me just step through that. I just stepped into the actual source. But if we go to copy blobs now, what we've got is the source which uses that copy API. So we've got our source container, the policy called copy policy, which is the one we just created, and a destination for that. So what we do first is we say, well, let's get a shared access signature that we can use to list and iterate through and then read out all the items from that private source container. So once we've got that, we can call list blobs. Now we can iterate through the blobs. And then what we're doing now is we're creating the appropriate destination blob, and we're ensuring that the type of that blob is the same as it was for the in the source, whether it was like a block blob or whatnot.
Yep.
So then we do that, and then this is the API which we're talking about. It basically says, now we've got the destination blob, let's queue up to start copying from the source blob. And we take the absolute URI of that source blob. So you can see here that I've got a cloud cover show in that container. And so we can read from that private container, we've got the shared access signature there.
Great.
So if I just hit F5 on this now, what we can do, we can come back and hit refresh. You can see that now in my destination container, we've got all that data. And in actual fact, there was a 500 meg file there in the cloud cover show. And that's gone across really quick within the one storage region, which I think in this case was East US or something like that.
Great. Wow, that's a really big file to go that quickly. That's great.
Yeah. So that's basically it.
Cool. So one of the other things is this, when you actually went through and coded out a lot of this stuff. So what happens if we just want a quick, easy way to go out and copy a blob across without actually programming against an API?
Yeah, well, you can utilize these explorers, for instance. Mm-hmm. I think you've also got some command line tools that can do that.
Yeah, so the cross-platform command line tools have implemented the copy blob functionality under Azure VM Disk Upload. Right. So even though it's under the VM area of the CLI tools, basically a blob's a blob. So it doesn't matter if it's a VHD file or a JPEG or a cloud cover episode, you can essentially just reference that path and then provide the storage credentials for the private folder on the other end, or just for the account that you're sending it to.
Cool. I think Michael Washam, one of our coworkers, wrote a blog post about that.
Yeah.
So that's available there in more detail.
Great.
Awesome. Well, I think that basically wraps up the show. Is there anything else that you can think of off the top of your head?
Not really. I think we nailed this one.
Okay. All right. So thank you for coming to Cloud Cover this week, and I hope you've enjoyed our guest, Corey Fowler. Certainly an awesome addition to our team and doing some really great stuff with PHP and even the training kit at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you can share about that?
Well, we will be releasing a new version of it shortly. I don't know if I can specify a date.
Okay.
Right away, but there will be a new drop of the training kit coming soon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot.